Hello, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of Tailwinds, the podcast associated with Air and Space Operations Review. I'm Laura Thurston Goodrow, and today we'll be visiting with Senior Master Sergeant and Dr. Brandon Dinkins about his article, Optimizing Security Forces Operations, Employing Risk-Based Strategies in our Fall 2023 issue. Brandon currently serves as the Operations Superintendent at the 45th Security Forces Squadron at Patrick Space Force Base in Florida. He entered the Air Force in 2004 and has performed numerous roles in the Security Forces career field, including as a patrolman, physical security specialist, criminal investigator, and Security Forces instructor. Brandon is originally from Mobile, Alabama. He and his wife, Takoy, have two children, Cameron and Jordan. He holds a master's degree in criminal intelligence and a PhD in criminal justice. Welcome to the podcast, Brandon.
Hey, Laura. Thank you again for having me. I'm looking forward to the great conversation.
Me too. So for starters, I always ask folks, in addition to the obvious, which is your vocation, what is the background of your interest in the subject of the article?
So by and large, a lot of this is dealing with health and safety, you know, as a primary focus. And when you're looking at the data that corresponds to security forces, there are statistics that reflect a high rate of physical injury and mental fatigue among the Air Force. And, you know, security forces has some of the highest numbers across the Department of the Air Force. So that was one of the things that I looked at and I chose, you know, on top of me being in the career field, you know, some background on why I wanted to explore, at least through an academic lens, some of the issues that the career field faces and how to create some better efficiencies in operations and build policy that can make it sustainable. So having a new concept, you know, helps to limit some of the issues that defenders have and offset some of the injuries, you know, that typically relates from environmental and occupational hazards that they deal with, you know, from working long shift hours and some of the traditional grind that security forces has by and large as a nature of what we do every day.
Well, I love how this article and your interest in this kind of, I was thinking that other authors that we have, it's the same. It's that practitioner application through an academic lens that then furthers the discussion. I really enjoy that part of this. So let's dive into the article. You discuss some challenges our defenders face today, our Air Force defenders. Can you tell us more about this? You mentioned integrated defense, the need for culture shift, for example.
So there's definitely need for a culture shift. You know, like you spoke about in the intro, you know, I've been in the Air Force for 19 years, a little over 19 years now. And I've seen a lot of changes and I've seen not so many changes. You know, over the last almost two decades, the way we have done business from a security and law enforcement standpoint has largely stayed the same. When you look around societal differences and how we've integrated, you know, new technological advancements, AI, for example, and other more innovative concepts, you know, security forces in a lot of ways kind of lags behind that. Although from an enterprise standpoint, we are largely trying to get after some of those issues. We are still rooted in some of the, you know, early policy that kind of drives a more manpower personnel driven philosophy, as opposed to a more technological one that can help augment and offset some of those more hazardous and mundane type of security practices that we've done. So, but it also ties back, like I started with, health and safety. From a security forces career field, we deal with a lot of occupational environmental hazards, as I stated before. I understand that as the nature of what we do and why we serve. And there's a great deal of pride that comes from me being a security forces member and doing those difficult things and grinding it out, you know, so to speak, having that get things done attitude. But there are some adverse effects of that. And I think at least from a physiological and health component, we have to look at some of those things that help our defenders. Right. There's a reason in getting to the root cause of why we have these issues, why we are some of the highest physical and multi-skeletal injury prone career field, as well as our mental health, stability and welfare. Like, why are those things so high? And I think when you look at just from institutionally what we do and a lot of the practices that we have, I think there are new and more innovative ways that we can help defenders be able to do their job and not have so many adverse effects, you know, that impact them every day.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about the integrated defense approach that the Air Force uses or has been using?
Yeah, absolutely. So integrated defense is, you know, for security forces in a way, that is our Bible, right? Mm-hmm. For security and for all of the things that go and coincide with how we operate. And we are built through integrated defense. And basically what that means is it's just layered defense, right? We start at the boundary, and we have several layers of defense in depth that protects personnel and resources on the installation or wherever we're occupying. That policy is largely headquarters level policy that drives and dictate how we apply our security concepts. You know, not every Air Force base is created the same.
Yeah.
Right. So that is largely the issue. And from a security forces commander, you know, also known as the DFC, the Defense Force Commander, they are heavily restricted in their ability to offset some of that headquarters level policy and be able to augment some security components at their level that can create some efficiencies, I should say, as well as be able to limit some manpower resources and drive security forces defenders in and out of 12-hour shifts. So that integrated defense policy is great in a lot of ways, but I think it needs to be at least a little bit more adaptable at the tactical level, mm-hmm. at the installation level, for those commanders to be able to have a little bit of bandwidth and a little bit of latitude to create a more modernized as well as a more feasible security application where they are, instead of looking at it as a holistic approach.
Hmm. To that end, you, in your article, you offer a new framework that prioritizes risk to alleviate those challenges. And I was interested that the little note that you made about Patrick using the quadruped unmanned ground vehicles or robot dogs.
Yeah.
And yes. Which I'm curious about how that's seen by people at Patrick, or what, just as an aside, I find that fascinating. I've never seen one in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, so interestingly enough, when I initially wrote the article, I wasn't at Patrick, and I ended up PCSing and going there. Right. So I thought that was interesting. So I, at the time, I didn't know much about the process and how they operate. And to be totally truthful, a lot of the things with the robot dogs, we're still trying to figure out on how we integrate them and how we better use them to assist the defenders, right? So there definitely is some innovation and some technology out there that when we look at security forces members, why do we have to, you know, place Fender on a resource when we have layered defense and using integrated defense concepts where we have boundary security, we have population control inside of the area, and we have camera and detection equipment, but we still post defenders in an environment where that they might be working there for 12-hour shifts, where they might be standing for long hours wearing body-worn equipment that weighs over 35 pounds. Right. What they're exposed to, the weather, the cold, the heat, the rain. We're in it 24/7, 365 days a year.
Yeah.
We do that, right. So is there a way that we could remove that defender and maybe place them behind a console, so to speak, to where we could visualize and view those areas that are normally occupied by a defender and put them in a situation that better allows them, you know, to relieve some of those adverse effects from being in an environment, having exposures to those occupational hazards when you talk about our gear and equipment and standing or even sitting in patrol vehicles for long periods of time. So that was just kind of one of the things, right? When you talk about Patrick, we have, I'm not familiar, sure if you're familiar with some of the geographical kind of area of it, but we're...
My husband was stationed there, so...
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, definitely. So we have shorelines. Mm-hmm. Both at Patrick and both at Cape Canaveral, because that falls under Cape Canaveral, falls under the Patrick organizational umbrella. We have defenders at Patrick, and we also have them at Cape Canaveral. So patrolling that shoreline, you know, there's some gaps that we can better alleviate, because right now we have defenders that are largely patrolling that area, right? So the concept was integrating these robo dogs in a way to be able to patrol that area and detect and report back to a defender that, hey, that there's something that's in this area that is not right, or is that somebody that doesn't belong in this area, as opposed to having defenders patrol back and forth or go out and do spot checks. It was a way to, like I say, augment our security and be able to take the defender out of the elements and put them in a position to where they are a little bit more protected, a little more safe. And at the same time, we're expanding their technical knowledge of the system and blind it across an array of different security concepts. So I just thought, like, as we are entering or now, you know, into the 21st century, we in a lot of ways have lagged behind when you see some of the other concepts from a security, from a, at least from a private sector standpoint of how they are integrating security, how they are developing ways to kind of eliminate some of those, again, those mundane and those dangerous type of security practices and replacing them with tech. You know, that was kind of the framework that I looked at. It's like, why do we have to apply this security strategy, especially when you look at the Air Force right now? We are limited in our recruitment. We are not going to grow in size. If you look across the enterprise, a lot of the security that we have is already stretched in, and we are trying to meet those requirements of integrated defense. So for, in my philosophy or my recommendation would be to give that power back to the DFCs to be able to have the latitude to restrict and augment or either reapply some security concepts at their installations.
So kind of mission command, sort of a subversion of that, maybe?
Yes. Kind of more, kind of a version of that. Yeah, because right now there is a policy and there's at least a vessel to be able to request those types of policy changes. My personal opinion is that a lot of commanders, they're a little hesitant to apply, or at least apply for those waivers. And I think a lot of that has to do with meeting expectations. It's in a lot of ways says that you're not able to do your job, even though we know that's not what it means, right? So I think if we open up the aperture and allow commanders to have that flexibility without having to go up and go through that extensive waiver requirement process, then I think it could be something that can be more immediately applied to help them and to help the defenders at their installation, at their squadrons.
So the Defense Force commanders being able to analyze risk at their level, I kind of see your mission as one of those, you know, when you look at not minor things, but major attacks at some level, it's sort of a low probability, but high impact type evaluation. So,
I was previously at Andrews, right? And, you know, every base, when you're looking at it, there's crime, there's security risks that are different at every base. And it's obviously different. And I compared it to, because I was more recently at Andrews and now at Patrick. But the crime and the threat level around the base is a little different. The mission there, when you look at security and protection of Air Force One, if you mess up there, then you're going to be on the national news, right?
Yeah.
So those risks are a lot different when you look at a place like Andrews versus a place like Patrick. But commanders should take that information. They should take that crime data, those statistics, their deficiencies that they have around their perimeters and in their security, and be able to assess with their subject matter experts and provide a recommendation to those installation commanders that, hey, this is the framework that I think is appropriate based on the risks and based on our geographic region, and this is how I want to apply it. They are the professionals, they are the commanders, and they are informed to be able to have that technical expertise to be able to determine their appropriate security philosophy at their location. And I think that has to be in tandem as well, right? When you're looking at the installation commander, because him or her owns responsibility for protection and good order and discipline of that base, but they are getting largely informed by that DFC, that Defense Force Commander, about the appropriate security strategy at their location based off the evaluation of risks, based off the evaluation of criminal data and trends to be able to inform their policy and practice.
So approaching this risk analysis from as you mentioned in the article, an intelligence-driven perspective is really important.
Absolutely. Like having an intelligence, if you look at local law enforcement, when they look at how they apply their patrolling activities, how they integrate their community policing practices, how they augment their security at mass gatherings, that's all driven by intelligence. And looking at peak times, whether it be peak times for crime, whether it be the rate of incident that we've had from security breaches at the gate or fence jumpers or whatever, all of that information ties back into what level of risk you are willing to take in terms of your security posture and your manning of patrolmen and security posts throughout that installation.
And something like that, just kind of thinking about that, seems like, you know, once that happens at more DFC level organizations, You then have the opportunity to share that lessons learned, that knowledge, maybe more effectively across the broader Air Force than the current structure.
Absolutely. And I think that's definitely, I want to point out, that's definitely a fluid process, right? And that evaluation of risk and that analysis process is ongoing, because what might happen one day might immediately change the way you do your philosophy. And you need to be able to create some battle rhythms in there to hopefully mitigate those threats that you encounter, right? But absolutely, you're sharing those lessons learned across, and other, you know, security forces units can apply a similar methodology and be successful. Thus, if you eliminate the amount of posts, you eliminate the amount of time that defenders are out in hazardous and dangerous types of environments, then I would like to think that a lot of the corresponding effects of the adverse, those adverse effects would diminish over time. So that helps create a more healthier defender, a more mentally resilient defender, and be able to help them over the long run. A lot of us get out with all kinds of issues. You know, I can talk about musculoskeletal injuries, problems, you know, just mental health issues overall. So I think it's important to look at some of the root causes of those issues and try to determine how we can overcome some of the challenges.
Yeah. And then, and by doing that, you also maybe make it a career field that's more appealing to people.
Absolutely.
So, right? Yeah,
absolutely. Which, I mean, I can tell you it definitely takes a great and special type of person to do what we do.
Yeah.
Because not everybody wants to do it. I can tell you that. And I'm proud to be a defender. I'm proud to say that I've overcome and I've made it through to a point in my career, because not everybody can do it. I can tell you that. There is definitely a badge of honor I wear and a lot of us wear because of what we do and because of how we, you know, get after protecting the Air Force mission and protecting the people on the bases where we serve every day.
I tell you, every time I roll through that gate, I just think, thank goodness for, you know, these young people that stand there every day doing a job that to me would just be so tedious, and then they're just waiting. I mean, it's really, you know, that they're doing every base, the whole time I've, you know, been associated with the Air Force for almost 30 years now. And it's something that I think when you're driving in the gate, you kind of take for granted if you're in a hurry and whatever, but you know, it's one of the most important jobs, and then kudos to those folks.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And I can tell you, it is often a thankless job, right? Because you can do everything great. And the moment something goes wrong, everybody is saying something about it. So, so I definitely appreciate that sentiment for myself. And I'm sure for a lot of defenders out there that are performing every day.
Well, we're thankful for them for sure. So as we wrap up, do you have any closing thoughts? If you were king for a day?
Yeah, I just want to say too, like, you know, I talked a lot about in the article about a lot of the things that you know, that I believe would be beneficial for the career field. But I wanted to say a lot of these things are not new to a lot of us in the career field, like to a lot of my peers, a lot of subordinates, a lot of my leaders. We've been talking about these things for years and even before my time as a defender, because I talked to a lot of folks that served, you know, before I even came in 2004 that were talking about the same things that I'm talking about now. So I just wanted to share that, you know, this is not some innovative thing that, you know, that I developed or that, you know, I just felt that it was necessary to put it on paper and write about it. So this is absolutely thought process of our junior airmen out there, our older senior NCOs and our commanders. I just felt like, you know, hey, I had an opportunity to do it. And so I wanted to put it out there. I also think that our leaders right now, you know, we have General Sherman, who's our security forces top cop, as well as our civilian SES level leader, Mr. Timothy Gerald. They're definitely making these changes. And I think they are absolutely behind getting after a lot of the things that's going to help the career field, as well as our Chief Gallagher. I think they're definitely doing the things from an enterprise level to help the career field get after things. And I think a lot of the things that I talked about, we're going to see, you know, here in the next few years. I might even see it in my time before I get done. But, you know, I just want to say that, you know, I'm proud, definitely proud of the people that I serve with. I'm proud to be a defender. I'm proud to do the things that we do every day. And if I were king for a day, you know, definitely I would want to integrate some of those things that I talked about paper, right? Being able to apply a different concept to alleviate some of the things that we've seen over the years. You know, I have a lot of friends that are veterans, a lot of them dealing with issues and problems that largely originated from when they served in the career field, right? Whether it be long hours, whether it be multiple combat deployments or anything like that. So I just want to say that to, you know, just thank you to the many people that I serve with. Thank you to those leaders who, you know, help develop and coach and mold my thinking to be able to even formulate this stuff on paper. So just proud of the people that I serve with, and just wanted, I guess, particular space and forum just to say thank you.
Well, you rightly acknowledge that the ideas are, you know, in the community and circulating, but it takes someone with the initiative like you to think through it and put it on paper, because that's how implementation happens. It has to be, you know, out there in a cohesive manner. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for your service as a defender and in our military as well. And all your colleagues, we really appreciate it. And I commend your article, Optimizing Security Forces Operations, Employing Risk-Based Strategies in Air and Space Operations Review Fall 2023 issue. Thank you, Brandon, for joining us on the podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you, Laura, and thank you so much for having me.